Welcome to the Business Bookshelf podcast, where I interview business authors and talk about their newly released books. The aim is that if you listen to this podcast regularly, that you'll get insight into a wide range of business topics from leadership through to innovation, culture, communication, and much more. Today, our guest is Dr. Gregory Bott. Greg is an entrepreneur, investor, and university instructor. At the age of 24, he quit his full-time corporate employment in pursuit of both higher education and entrepreneurship. Since then, he has owned and operated numerous businesses across multiple industries, including hospitality, real estate, and agriculture. His businesses have ranged from franchise to independent, from startups to acquisitions, from heavily staffed to one-person operations, from leveraged to debt-free, and from solo ownership to numerous stakeholders. Greg is the author of Faster, Safer, Wealthier, Skip the Startup and Buy a Stable Business to Build Intergenerational Wealth. High-risk entrepreneurship is a tough route to a rich life and financial freedom. Startup stress, like relying on a once-in-a-lifetime innovation or setting on a one-track objective to billionaire status, results in detours and setbacks rather than the financial rewards you desire. Not all businesses are high-risk endeavors, though. Substantial lasting wealth can be built in the space between broke and billionaire when you reframe your idea of business ownership. Skip the risky startup and walk straight into an already cash-flowing business to create and retain wealth. Gregory's structured framework for small business acquisition and mitigating risk, accelerate wealth accumulation and elevating your business for profitable growth. With a step-by-step guide for both new and seasoned entrepreneurs, you can stay on a steady path of incremental gains as a rightful business owner for safer financial success that lasts generations. I talked to Greg about why it's a great time to be an entrepreneur, the character traits of a successful entrepreneur, and what to look at when buying a business. So here we go. Enjoy the interview.
Thanks, Lance. Happy to be here.
It's always fantastic to speak to people like you, experts like you around the world. And talking about that, where do I find you? Where are you today?
Sure. And maybe I'll just say I'm really excited for this one. I really appreciate your strategy and approach to the podcast. I'm happy to be here. I'm calling in from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. So I've lived in a few other places. I've lived in England and Australia for university, and I've lived in other parts of Canada. But the more, I guess, I was away, I realized after a number of years that at some point the best place to be is where your friends and family are.
Yeah.
So that kind of brought me back to Alberta. And as I'm speaking here, Lance, I know, you know, I've been listening to your podcast, and one thing that I don't know is, and some of your listeners probably don't know, is where are you calling in from?
Well, I just want to say, Greg, that I've done 174 episodes of the podcast, and amazingly enough, you're the first person I've spoken to from Canada, which is interesting because I would have thought I would have spoken to, you know, writers before, but that's amazing. It's great to speak to you. I'm from Johannesburg, South Africa. So the lions are in the front garden. It's a wild place here in South Africa, but we are here and surviving, and I'm able to speak to incredible people like you. And talking about that, Greg, can you give us an overview of your career before we get onto your fantastic book?
Sure. So I guess I've been a little bit more strategic in how I organize my time over the last number of years, and I've organized my time around functions or pillars, however you want to call it. And if something falls within that, that's great. I'd like to advance that. And if it doesn't fall within it, then it probably doesn't get done. So the first one is business ownership. And right now, what that means for me is operating a property management company. So we manage single family homes for investors. And being in that space has also allowed us to build up a little bit of a real estate portfolio as well. The second thing is community service. And what that means for me, where I found that I can contribute to the community, is on nonprofit boards. Right now, I'm on the board of a social service agency and another one on the Agriculture Commodity Commission. And then the third function is personal development. And just over the last number of years, that's allowed me to sit back a little bit more and reflect. And as I do that, I feel that I can contribute better to the businesses. The further I step away from them, maybe kind of paradoxically, the more that I'm able to contribute to them. So over the last couple of years, you know, writing the book has been part of that. It's been, you know, the first year I was writing the book, I probably read 100, 120 books.
Wow.
And that part of feeding into that. And I currently instruct at the local university on business strategy, and just being back in the classroom is, you know, if you're teaching it, it's part of reflection, and, you know, you really have to think through things if you're articulating them to others. So that's helped part of that development as well.
That's amazing. And talking about the book, it's called Foster Safer, Wealthier, Skip the Startup and Buy a Stable Business to Build Integrational Wealth. And there's loads that I want to talk to you about that. And you've spoken about the purpose, but can you give us a brief overview of what the book's about?
Sure. So yes, for a number of years, I've always been involved with startups, and we've had, you know, some hurdles and some successes with that. And a few years ago, one of my organizations that I own purchased the business of a competitor. So we did an acquisition and tacked on their book of business onto our organization. And I remember, you know, we really tripled the size of our company overnight. And I remember sitting back thinking, you know, are we going to be able to keep up with the phones? Did we take off more than we can chew? And the weeks and months to follow, it was kind of relatively anticlimactic. And I remember talking to my business partner, just thinking like, there's more to this. Like, let's try and do this again, because there's so many advantages of the acquisition that you get over. You know, the startup is so risky and so challenging, and there's so many things you need to focus on. But with an acquisition, a lot of that stuff you just comes with it. So it removes a lot of the risk and a lot of the workload. So we started to really build out a manual for ourselves to go, to duplicate this and replicate this over, so we could scale our business through repeat acquisitions. And then over the couple of years that, you know, as I researched and thought about this, a book just naturally evolved as I realized that I had more to share about the impact of an acquisition can have on someone's journey to wealth accumulation, not just wealth accumulation, but wealth retention. And that's a big part of what the acquisition does, is it takes out a lot of the risk that's inherent with a startup. So the book really takes the reader on a journey. At first, challenges them a little bit to think about themselves, think about how they fit within an entrepreneurial context, if they are an entrepreneur. And then it goes on to really detail the acquisition process, and then thinks about business ownership through a risk mitigation lens at each step of the acquisition process.
And you tell that story actually in your book about the acquisition. And then you say, I think you said in the book that you said to your partner, okay, things are going so well, I'm out of here, I'm doing something else. Isn't that right?
That's right. And I guess partly the context on that is, with an acquisition, you get talent along with it. You're purchasing the talent. So it's not just the business, but you're purchasing this infrastructure and the talent. And we had within our organization and what we brought on people that were a lot more talented than myself. And I no longer had to be worried about every function, because every business function that you do, whether it's payroll or HR or sales, those are all being taken care of by people that were better and more specialized than I was. And that's what you get with an acquisition. With a startup, you're doing a lot of those, or all of those essentially, on your own, and you can't focus and be the best at all of those. So something suffers, and it's hard to scale, which isn't necessarily the case with an acquisition.
Yes. So Greg, I've had experience of being an entrepreneur or a solopreneur, I think, and I'd love to be an entrepreneur again in the future. And is it a great time at the moment to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, it is a great time to be an entrepreneur. And there's a few things going on there. One is there's this kind of macro trend, and then there's some more micro or contemporary things that are working towards that as well. So on the macro trend, and Chrystia Freeland does a really good job in her book talking about, you know, the shift of where wealth is held. So if we look back 100 years ago or 80 years ago, capital and wealth was held by landowners, so agriculture and landowners, and it was hard to penetrate because it was very capital intense. And then that moved over to, let's say, factory work or factory owners or manufacturing is where a lot of the wealth was held. So you think, you know, Henry Ford and the assembly lines. And what that meant was that wealth tended to be inherited between generations. So if you wanted to be wealthy, it was hard to get in there, and because it was capital intense to start up a business. And businesses, by their very nature, you know, being manufacturing and agriculture, were capital intense. And then more recently, there's just been a shift towards what we call first generation working rich. And a lot of people, if you look at, you know, the Forbes rich list, or in Canada, we have our own rich list. And a lot of people on there more recently, there's this trend of being first generation where they built their own wealth that wasn't inherited. And that means it's a lot easier for individuals to penetrate that and penetrate it in a shorter amount of time. And some of those micro trends that are allowing for that, for example, is the pace of technology. So there's opportunity for growth if you have systems and technology that facilitate and put processes within your business, where it's not manual labor anymore, where you need lots of people in order to fulfill a task. This reach of digital marketing is another one. So social media, where not even that too distant a past, strong marketing campaigns were really owned by large institutions. If you want to talk about radio or television advertising, and it was hard for smaller companies or startups to, you know, participate in that. And now when they shifted over to social media, you essentially become a global company overnight because you have this larger reach. You know, we can talk about the exit of the baby boomers, which has created this gap in the market, whether you take over their organizations as an acquisition or as they exit and retire. It opens up this opening of their customers that now need to be serviced. And then the type of organizations that are successful in today's environment tend to have a lower startup capital just by the nature of their, what they do. So it's, you know, service companies, technology companies. You don't need large office rents to start an organization. So you can create wealth at an exponential rate where you couldn't in previous generations. So there's just this opportunity for someone to rethink how they want to approach wealth and be part of that, where in previous generations it was a lot more challenging to penetrate if you aren't already wealthy.
Yeah, I agree. And that was the allure for me, I think, because, you know, I spent a couple of $100 getting a website tool and a domain name and all those kind of things to set up a company. And that was really what I needed. And then, of course, you need the business model canvas and the purpose and a product that meets a need and all those kind of things, which is the difficult part of having a business. And you also need character traits, which I think maybe is something that I lacked, or that I blame COVID for my failure. But what character traits should I have had to be a successful entrepreneur?
Well, I think you have a lot of these. So let's go down. So how I come up with character traits is, you know, a lot of times when you read more academic literature or even entrepreneurial curriculum within business schools, they tend to focus more on hard skills. So, you know, an understanding of operations, an understanding of accounting, calculation of your ROI, and all those things, they can either be learned or outsourced, or you have people in your organization to do that. So in reading biographies and autobiographies of successful entrepreneurs, I found a number of themes that emerged. So you can call it secondary research or practitioner research, but it's just some of the things stood out for me. The first one is self-awareness, which is the ability to reflect on your personal capacity and in the reflection to understand both your strengths and weaknesses. So just being aware of that and having the humility to go through that exercise. And knowing your strengths is very important because that is really your strategic advantage. And if you're not clear on your strategic advantage, there's other people out there and competitors that are aware of theirs. So and it's pretty dangerous to be competing against somebody that is self-aware when you're not. And then on the other side, being your weakness is, you can only by understanding that can you then move forward and surround yourself with people that can mitigate and fill in that gap, or you can continue to develop those and learn them, but you can only make strides on those by first understanding and being humble enough to go self-recognize. The second one is acceptance of failure. So I think, you know, a lot of people, whether it's egos or whatnot, can overlook this one. But in reality, you will fail, and it might not be catastrophic failures or near bankruptcies, but what it is there's always these micro hurdles and setbacks that you face every day. And, you know, they're of different magnitudes, but you can only learn and reflect. And this goes back to self-awareness by accepting those and acknowledging them. And once you do that, you can then move on and learn from them and revise your journey based off of those learnings. Mm. I like to say that, you know, if you maintain your integrity and honesty in your dealings, failures are nothing more than tuition of life's education. So you need to have them. And a lot of times that's the best way to learn, is to have them and to be aware of them moving forward. The next one is display a strong work ethic. If you pulled the general population and asked an attribute of entrepreneurs, this one would probably come up: work ethic.
Yeah.
But even entrepreneurs, when you survey entrepreneurs that are a few years into their journey and say, what do you feel you would have, what have you learned, or what do you feel that you didn't really know? And they say, I didn't realize how hard. I knew it would be hard, but I didn't realize how hard. So that's often underestimated, even though it's recognized. Mm. Embracing uncertainty and chaos. That's a big one. Really thriving on that. Amanda Lang has a book, and the title kind of says it all, is the beauty of discomfort. So being an entrepreneur, just knowing that things are coming at you quick and evolving, and being able to take that chaos and turn it into systems, but not panicking in the process. And I think this is one that I really struggled with early in my entrepreneurial career, is trying to be a controlling perfectionist, and not, which makes you overwhelmed when the environment shifts. Mm. And lastly, this is probably the most important one, and if you understand this, every other trait is almost secondary to this, and that's perseverance. And it comes with a number of names. You can call it grit, you can call it resilience. The one that I like is stick with itness. Is just really says it all. If you continue and keep pushing, then success is always almost inevitable, and you can't fail if you're still moving forward and still pushing. Where a lot of people, I think this might be maybe a Brian Tracy quote, is, you know, a lot of people get tripped up one step before Lady Luck is really about to reward them for that journey. So if you don't give up, perseverance and success really is, it becomes inevitable. Mm.
So that's fantastic. So the five character traits to be a successful entrepreneur are self-awareness, ability to deal with failure, strong work effort, ability, embracing uncertainty and chaos, and perseverance. And just to remind the listeners, we're speaking to Dr. Gregory Bott about his fantastic book, Faster, Safer, Wealthier: Skip the Startup and Buy a Stable Business to Build Integrational Wealth. And Greg, a quote from your book that really struck me, and I was very surprised by it, and I'm going to read it to the listeners. The quote is, a study of US data found the average age of an entrepreneur to be 42 when they started their company, and the average age of a successful startup founder, success determined by highest growth, to be 45. And that gives me hope, I guess, being 51 myself. But that seems really, really old. Why is that age and most successful at starting a business and being successful?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And what I use that study for, that quote for, is to help me form an argument that contrasts against popular myths. So the media tends to really pick up on not the data, but the outliers. So there's these really interesting and, you know, sexy stories out there about entrepreneurs, like, you know, whether it be Facebook or
Mark Zuckerberg,
Elon Musk or Richard Branson, and there's this, it really buys into this myth of, you know, you need to start young, you need to be charismatic, and if you're not working, you're, you know, out of your parents' basement by the age 15, you've kind of lost that opportunity. So these stories create this perception in people's minds of what an entrepreneur should look like. And, you know, business grads then hold these people up as kind of superheroes, and they want to aspire to these. But what it does for the rest of us out there is that we don't, when we look in the mirror and we're expecting a certain typecast of an entrepreneur, we don't see an entrepreneur looking back at us because we don't fit that perfect story of what we've been led to believe. Mm-hmm. When in reality, entrepreneurs are successful at any age. It doesn't matter if you have formal education or not. Formal education is not a prerequisite, and that's a whole another interesting topic. You don't need to be wealthy before you start entrepreneurship, because it's that business and that journey of entrepreneurship that builds that wealth. So I use that quote in the book, or that study, just to help displace some of these myths and say entrepreneurship is really for anybody. And there's a few stories in the book, you know, Arianna Huffington, who was, you know, deep into her 50s when she first started her first business and, you know, sold it for in the 300 millions. And those are just as, you know, popular, and the data supports those, but those aren't the stories that we're used to hearing. So it,
I suppose the one that everyone talks about is Colonel Sanders with KFC when he 70s or 80s or 90s.
That's right. Write that section, put that in there. That's right.
So that gives me hope, Greg. Thank you so much. I've got a couple more questions, and people need to, obviously we're just scratching the surface. People need to read your book and buy your book. But we talk about the side hustle. So if you want to be an entrepreneur, perhaps the path to go is to get this, you know, to get a regular 9-to-5 or whatever, and then start doing something in your spare time. And when this activity becomes, lucrative, and you're now making money, and you're making as much money as your full-time job, then you resign and you go and you do your side hustle full-time. Do you think that's a route? And is it possible to be a part-time entrepreneur? Like, is it possible to have the side hustle that's really growing and becoming this amazing side business? Or is that really another myth?
It's a good question, because that term is really becoming popularized over the last little while. And, you know, we talk about the gig economy and other words, that buzzwords that have really popped up. And, you know, right now there's this kind of mass exodus. I just heard the term this morning. I can't think of what it is, but of people quitting their jobs.
Yeah, the great resignation.
That's right. That's it. So I think the answer to that is it really depends what you want from your business and what you want your relationship with that business to look like. And the quick answer to that I'll elaborate on is that partial focus builds partial businesses. So, because in reality, there's a lot higher failure rate for those that enter part-time. And I like the book title of Arlene Dickinson's first book. The book title is All In. And to me, that just summarizes the truth that entrepreneurship is all-consuming. So if you enter part-time, you might chug along okay for a little while, but you won't scale that business without your full-time attention. And I know being told to quit your job is really scary to hear. So my advice for those that are hesitant to do that is to jump in upon a milestone. So plan ahead and think, okay, am I moving this into a full-time career when it hit 10 customers, or is it 6 months before the acquisition? But just be clear on that. And if you want to just always have it as a side hustle or stay in the gig economy, and you know, that works for a lot of people. But if you want like true wealth through business ownership and have that as a major source of wealth accumulation, then you really need to put in a full-time effort in order to have that business work for you.
Mm. Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I listen to a lot of podcasts on entrepreneurship and that sort of thing. And a lot of people have said they went full-time and their husband or wife had a full-time job and supported them during that period. So I think maybe that's the way to go, is have someone, either have big savings or have your partner who is able to sustain you while you are ramping up your business, hopefully. The book, again, is called Faster, Safer, Wealthier, Skip the Startup and Buy a Stable Business to Build Integrational Wealth. And I think I just want to ask you a question about the key concept in that title, which is buy a stable business. And even there, the key word there is stable. So how do you, as an entrepreneur or wannabe entrepreneur, look for a stable business? How do you assess it? How do you know whether this business is something that you should buy?
Sure. So I think in your search for business, there's a few things that I look for, and I set aside industry, because the industry is a little bit, when people start to think about business, they first gravitate to industry or even a micro piece of that industry, because that's where their experiences have been. And that's not necessarily the best starting point, because if you're strong in sales, it really doesn't matter what you're selling. If you're strong in operations, you're probably going to be strong in operations in a different industry as well. So those general concepts and traits carry over. Mm. So I like to think more, in how to assess a company and buy it. I think I look more at fundamentals. And the first one is fixed costs versus variable costs, and which really looks at the risk that you have, risk and how you grow that. Where in COVID, we saw a lot of businesses that had storefronts, which means expensive commercial rents, went under, because it's a lot easier to dip below your break-even point if you have a fixed cost model and a big portion of your expenses are fixed cost. And it's also easier to grow a variable cost model, because you can grow it with less of a need for capital and injection. So understanding where that company sits on this fixed cost or variable cost model. Next one is recurring versus non-recurring revenue. So how stable is the business from, and predictable, do you have subscriptions and contracts where you can say, here's what this company is going to make in 6 months, and it's almost certain because those customers are locked in, and there's strong or expensive switching costs for that customer to go look elsewhere. Customer concentration is a big one. So if you're buying, make sure you're buying a business and not a customer. A few customers make up a large percentage of your revenue, and you buy that business, you take that on, and those customers leave, you're left servicing the debt from the acquisition, but yet you have no incoming revenue to offset that. Mm. And then we can talk about industry, is just thinking about, is this a business, kind of more in general, one that's going to be around intergenerationally, and do I want to hold this business 10, 15, 20 years out, or is this business on a trend? And there tends to be a negative correlation between glamorous businesses and ones that are really exciting to operate and ones that are profitable and enduring. So some scholars talk about buying a dull business or similar words, because there's a little bit less attraction for other people to enter those. So I suggest you find a business where your passion, your energies, and your abilities are really in line with the strategic needs of that business. And if those all line up, you happen to be the rightful owner of that business at that time, where the previous or existing owner might be tired and they're no longer the rightful owner of that business in that definition, and don't have the capacity to take it to the next level where you enter. And you can do that.
So I didn't write down the key points this time, Greg. Can you just list them again? So the key things to look out for.
Yeah. Fixed cost versus variable cost model. Understanding that. Recurring versus non-recurring revenue. Mm-hmm. An understanding of customer concentration. And then just understanding the overarching stability of this type of an organization.
Sure. Fantastic. So Gregory, can you tell us about your website? It's www.gregbott.com. And I'll have a link in the show notes. Can you tell us what people will find if they go to the website?
Sure. It's the best way to contact me. It has links to socials as well. There's some resources on there in terms of the things that we talked about today in, you know, buying a existing business for stable wealth and building wealth as opposed to the acquisition. There's some videos and resources, and then just really more about the book. But if any of the listeners did want to reach out or want some further discussion on these topics, then the website, it's the best place to do that.
And you can sign up for an email newsletter, I imagine, first name, last name, email address. What will people get if they subscribe there? Greg, thank you so much for being on the Business Bookshelf podcast. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Lance. This one's been an honor.
Awesome. So I've been speaking to Dr. Gregory Bott, and his book is Faster, Safer, Wealthier, Skip the Startup and Buy a Stable Business to Build Integrational Wealth. And maybe that's what I'll do next time. I won't start my company from scratch. I'll look for a company and buy it. It sounds like a good idea. Anyway, so that's what I plan to do. And you can find the book. I have the link in the show notes, so you can go straight and buy that book on Amazon or any of the other places you can buy books. If you found this interview interesting, or if you know someone who wants to become an entrepreneur and just needs to, you know, read up, obviously Greg's read hundreds of books to make his put his book together. And so just pass on this interview to them, please. If you also like this interview, then please go onto Apple and give it a 5-star review. That'll be so fantastic. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you again, Dr. Gregory Bott. And everyone, enjoy your week and stay safe and stay well. Until next time, goodbye. Bye-bye, everybody. Are you an author and would like to launch your business or technology book to a global audience? The Business Bookshelf podcast can run a virtual book launch for you. It'll include planning sessions with you, the 60-minute live event on LinkedIn, Facebook, and YouTube, up to 3 guests to appear and endorse your book, social media support and activation, prizes and giveaways, the edited event to share with people who couldn't make it, 3 social snippets to share on social media, and a dedicated episode of this podcast. To find out more, visit www.businessbookshelfpodcast.com. And if it's not for you, then tell others about it. Thank you.